Steve, thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill, and then it's Wendy, and we're thrilled that you're listening. We're at 312-981-7200. If you want to contribute in any way, shape, or form, we all invite you to.
Happy Thrilling Thursday. Everybody has a name now.
Is today Thrilling Thursday?
Cyber Monday, yes. And it's December 1st, so only 23 shopping days left to get my present.
To get your present singular? You just said present.
Yeah.
Just the one?
Yeah, sure.
Only 23 days? What about...
We open gifts on Christmas Eve. We're one of those.
And well, 7-Eleven's open on Christmas Eve.
They're open every day.
Yeah, we don't. I guess we don't start till 6.
Plenty of time.
You'll be fine.
Do you open on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day?
As a kid, we opened our presents late at night on Christmas Eve, and I still now in the family I'm currently residing with, my wife and daughters. We do Christmas Day, but I liked late night on Christmas Eve. If it was up to me, it'd be then.
We have kept with that tradition because my grandmother was the one, Nina. She could not wait. So it was like, no patience. Let's just do it first thing Christmas Eve.
So Nina liked it Christmas Eve, but Pinto, her husband, was Christmas Day.
Nina
and their child,
was her husband.
Santa Maria said whenever.
They would go to Our Lady of Santa Maria for church.
Nina and Nino.
Nina and Nino.
It was supposed to be Nonna and Nonno because that's grandma and grandpa in Italian, and my cousin Susie couldn't say it. And you know how every grandparent has a nickname?
Yeah.
It became, instead of Nonna and Nonno, it was Nina and Nino.
I have met in my life so many people whose name is slightly irregular because somebody couldn't pronounce Brian. Why is your name Bawabo? Well, I got a younger cousin who couldn't say Brian, so it's been Bawabo ever since.
I got the worst one ever.
What?
And God love my Auntie Mary, who has been, I don't know if she was on the air when I worked with you. I know that she told the Mickey Mouse joke, and why is Mickey mad at Minnie? And she just went on to finish the story with the F word there. So I had to dump my Aunt Mary.
Right.
Her grandkids called her Gog.
G-O-G, Gog?
No, not just G-O-G. It's G-A-A-G, which is even worse that the spelling was like that.
Like a Scandinavian version of Gog.
But she was Italian. I don't know. I think, you know, babies go Gaga. So they just kept it at that.
So everyone in the family then called her Gog.
Everyone did.
Because a small infant couldn't say her name.
I know. Isn't that crazy? I don't know who started it. I know that I call her Auntie Mary. She was my great Auntie Mary. God rest her soul. She was a hoot and a half. I hate that term.
A hoot and a half?
A hoot. But she was. And all her grandchildren called her Gog, and not like Gog, as it was spelled, G-A-A-G, but Gog.
Gog. Listen to this and tell me if this makes sense.
Isn't that the worst one you've heard of, though?
Yeah.
Be honest.
Yeah.
That's my Auntie Mary's Jell-O. It's Gog's Jell-O.
Gog's Jell-O. I don't know that this was a thing anywhere else except in my mom's family, but my mom had an uncle whose name was Uncle Lindy, but his name wasn't anywhere near Lindy. And I used to say, because every once in a while, his wife would call him, and I don't remember what his real name was because it was always just Uncle Lindy, always. But then I'd hear his wife call him a different name. And I'd say to my mom, why does she call him that name, but everyone else calls him Uncle Lindy? And my mom explained that when he was young, he admired Charles Lindbergh. So everybody calls him Lindy because of his admiration for Charles Lindbergh. And I go, well, that's weird. And my mom goes, why is that weird? But it is weird.
It's totally weird.
It's crazy, right?
I liked, fish sticks when I was a kid.
Well, that's why some people
call you Mrs. Gortons.
Mrs. Gortons of Gloucester.
That's crazy.
What kind of a world was it at that point where people just called you whatever you admired?
I admired Lucille Ball. No one called me Lucy.
Bally.
No.
Some people do.
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
I'm
but
married.
In high school.
You're lucky I like you. That's all I have to say.
But think about all the people that we all just admire. Like, I know what Charles Lindbergh pulled off an amazing feat. I get that. But, you know, really.
That's crazy.
I liked what Anthony Rizzo did all season long. But no one goes, when they see me, they'll go, hey, Riz is here. No one does that.
You wish.
They could do that if they wanted. No No one does.
I thought maybe he enjoyed a good Lindy's chili every day for his entire life.
And that may be how Lindy's chili got its name. Maybe
because they admire Charles.
Right. Maybe the owner of Lindy's chili is like, what Lindbergh did, huh?
He could fly a little oyster cracker over the chili.
What an aviator he was. I shall name my chili empire after him.
Uncle Lindy.
But no one else in the family thought that was weird. Like every once in a while, I'd corner a cousin. I'd go, hey, how about that thing with Uncle Lindy? That's kind of weird, right? No, why is that weird? He liked Charles Lindbergh. Let him be.
Grandparents have the weirdest names. Who called us last week? What was her name? Grandma
Titi.
Yep. See what I mean?
That's right.
It's loving. It's endearing. And even sometimes when it's unattractive, like Gog,
right?
It just means the world.
It just shows what putty grandparents are, right? So if you were to go to her when she was 35 saying, one day they're going to call you Grandma TT, like, no.
Oh, Grandma TT, if you're listening, please call, because she was a hoot. That's my new word today.
You can say hoot all you want. I told you, I saw some movie last week, and there was a character in there also named Grandma TT, and I don't remember what movie it was, but I'm like, wait, how did that happen twice in a month? How did I go my entire life without meeting anybody with that name? And then twice in a month, I know one of them was fictional, but still, that's kind of weird.
And my mom was just a character, I'll tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
And when my brother had his first daughter, Kara, and my mom became a grandmother for the first time, it wasn't Grandma Elaine, she wanted grandmother.
Oh.
She goes, I don't want grandma, I don't want Nana, I want grandmother.
That has a very royal feeling to it, doesn't it?
Well, God bless those kids. My brother's kids always called her grandmother. They never once screwed up and said grandma. I mean, they might have once, and then my mom would be like,
look.
It's grandmother.
Oh.
And she always signed her cards to me, mother, even though like I was like, ma, mom.
Your mom would write a card to you?
Love, mother. Grandmother and mother. It's weird.
When my grandfather would give my brother or myself a gift, and we got gifts from him, of course, you know, on
Birthdays and Christmas,
and sometimes Charles Lindbergh's birthday, because everybody admires Charles Lindbergh. He would put on the envelope of the card and then on the inside of the card, Dear Bill Leff.
That's worse.
First name and last name. Isn't that weird?
That's weirder than mother.
How impersonal is that? Dear Bill Leff. And then it was the regular card, and then he would sign his name at the bottom.
That's fantastic.
Like, did you have a lawyer look at this before you gave it to me?
That sounds like someone who had someone purchase his cards a year in advance.
Yeah.
And they put your full name so he would know which one it was for.
Right. He
oh
didn't know, because I'd always think,
so
I go,
funny.
Does he know anybody else? Well, I don't know. Does he know another Bill? And then my brother's name's Adam. Does he know another Bill and Adam? Why is our last name on there, too? And then we'd always get a gift certificate. This shows what a careful shopper he was. We would get a Jewel gift certificate.
Okay, that for
to
a kid?
Jewel. Yay, I can buy some peas now.
Well, look at the candy when your mom dragged you along to the store.
There's stuff
but
at Jewel.
Jewel.
Yeah, we'd get a jeweled gift certificate made out to our names, first and last.
Oh, my God, that's so funny.
I know.
Bill Leff.
And my mom would always go, do you want me to tell him there's something? No, it's fine. I'll get some frozen chicken or something. It'll be great.
See, as a mom, that's where I would have given you, like, say it was a $10 gift certificate. I would have just taken that off your hands and given you the $10
right.
cash.
Because
right. your mom would have used it.
Absolutely. Without a doubt.
Were you a Jewel or Dominic's person growing up?
We split our time fairly equally.
We were Jewel. And it's obviously just what's closer to you.
Yeah, I think so.
These memories again. I'm telling
Happy
you, December.
Memories.
You know, can I just say my small town?
Yeah.
The grocer was named Jewel.
But
really?
it wasn't a Jewel
right.
store.
So I grew up thinking, you know, we'd go to Jewel's.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
That worked out beautifully.
See, warm holiday memories.
That's what
we're here for all month long.
So true. All Christmas talk. Turn on the light.
Well, Christmas talk is better than Christmas music.
I think it is.
Although
I
can't
is.
Get away from it. And I tried the Channel 17 as you recommended on the satellite.
Yeah.
Dylan doesn't like it because it's too current.
Yeah, they don't go with the classics much. It is. It's a lot of Bryan Adams.
Yeah,
I know.
I don't need that.
All right, a quick break and then more discussion. Jump in. There's already people online. 312-981-7200. We would love to hear from you. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
It's Bill and Wendy. We were talking about grandparents and crazy names, and I had my Auntie Mary went by Gog, which I think is the worst one. G-A-A-G.
Yeah.
I don't know who came up with that spelling either.
It sounds like some sort of a monster.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
And she was awesome. She was so funny and loving and quick wit, but
the name
ugly
did not,
name.
Did not fit her.
No, what do you want to be called when you're a grandpa?
Oh.
Bill?
Yeah, probably Bill. I'd be okay with that. Well, my nieces and nephews would always call me Uncle Bill, which always reminded me of Family Affair.
Yep.
And then I was hanging out. My best friend's name is Mr. French, so we always thought that was weird, so I needed to get away from that.
Did you have an affair with Mrs. Beasley?
Not an affair, a close friendship.
Or a boyfriend named Jody?
Yes.
Do you sign your cards, Uncle Bill?
No, my nephews, they just all call me Bill, and I'm fine with that. It's reciprocal. Like, our daughters don't call their aunts or uncles aunt or uncle or anything. It's just their name. I don't know how that happened, but I like that. I'm all right with that.
Our family sticks with the auntie.
Do
auntie
they?
And uncle.
Yeah.
To this day, except my sister, as she sends a card to the boys, she just signs it Betsy.
Oh, that's all?
I'm like, no, it's Aunt Betsy. Yeah, whatever.
I don't know.
Show some respect.
I guess
it differentiates you from just another cousin.
Just your average Betsy, I guess.
It's just aunt.
All right.
I like it.
I will tell my nieces and nephews to now call me Uncle Betsy. I'm fine with that.
Hi, Connie.
Hi.
I'm
from Wisconsin, and I listen every day. I love your show.
Thank you, Connie.
Thank you, Connie.
You're welcome. My mother could not say her sister's name, so she was taught to call her Tata.
Tata.
Her name
still makes you laugh.
Her name was Ethel, and she couldn't. She had a lisp, so she called her Ethel.
But where does Tata come from? I think you know.
I thought it was quick and easy. I mean, it was. Far from us all.
You know, and she was buxom.
It's still bullying, even if it comes 50 years later.
Right. And then my nephew couldn't say T's. He would substitute the T for the F. And one day a fire truck went by.
Uh-oh, careful.
He shouted out, "Oh, Dad, look at the fire."
Blank.
Yeah. Thank you for stopping, Connie.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty common.
I guess it is. Thank you, Connie. Yeah. Have a great week.
You're welcome. You too.
Take care.
And a nice holiday.
Yeah.
All right, I got another one that's pretty fantastic. Hi, Carrie. Who's a grandma in your family?
I'm the grandma.
And what do they call you?
The kids call me Grandma Animal.
Grandma Animal. Because why? Yeah. Why would that be?
The thing is that both grandparents live in the same town. So when my daughter and son-in-law would be driving to one of our houses, my granddaughter would say, "Which grandma are we going to?" The grandma with the animals. And I used to play with her with all these little animals when I babysat for her over the summer because I was a teacher. And so she said, "Grandma with the animals, Grandma Animals." So since then, all three of my grandkids call me Grandma Animal.
That's adorable.
Or Granimal, if they're in a hurry.
Oh, yeah.
That would work, too.
Yeah, they write their... Well, my granddaughter just turned 12, so if she writes me a letter or cards, she'll put Grandma Animal. They're Grandma Animal.
Love it.
Well, have a great holiday. Thanks for sharing that, Carrie.
Oh, I will.
Sorry. And
cut off Grandma Animal.
I'm sorry. We have to end this segment talking to Grandma TT.
Oh, is she here?
Yes. Hi, Grandma TT.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I listen to you every day.
Well, we were so excited when you called the other day because we had never heard of a Grandma TT. How did that come to be?
Oh, it wasn't TT. I'm sorry. I'm Grandma Feetsy.
Wendy? Come on.
Wait, Feetsy?
No, Feetsy.
Cece.
Yes, my name is Phyllis.
And oh, I see.
When I was growing up, I could not say that. And so since I've been 3 years old, I told everyone my name was Fifi. So now I'm called Grandma Pee-Pee.
Pee-Pee.
Pee-Pee. F as in Frank.
Wait.
Oh, Fifi. F as in Frank.
Yeah.
Right. And I spell it F as in Frank and E as in Edward because when I was learning to spell, I spelled it phonetically. So...
And isn't that the symbol for iron on the periodic charts?
Yep.
How about that? I remembered one thing from high school.
It worked.
I had no idea. I had no idea. But now, even adults today don't know how to spell. I'm called thief, too. And I just had a birthday, and all my cards, they hardly knew how to spell thief.
That's adorable.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thanks, Grandma Fifi. With enough.
Thank you. Okay.
Bye. Have a good one.
So we just learned that half of our audience have funny names because their grandchildren can't pronounce their real names. Okay.
Teach good. The kids to talk, will you?
A break, some news, and then a lot more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Steve. Hey, Bill, can I tell you a little something? Chicago Media Project is the premier Chicago nonprofit organization supporting social issue documentary film.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be announcing the return of the Doc 10 Film Festival. That's going to be happening in March, but tonight a little preview of the fest with a documentary called The Last Laugh, and we have some guests in the studio.
We do, actually. Anthony Kaufman is here, film programmer. Paula Fraley, am I saying the last name right, Paula? I hope I am. Co-founder and CEO of the festival that you just described are both here, and I just found out moments ago that Anthony teaches at the school that my daughter is studying at in New York. So,
is that why you slipped him a 50?
Yeah, I gave him 50 bucks. Which should cover the costs of the school in New York.
One book.
Maybe your salary.
Maybe, possibly. Thanks for being here, guys. Really appreciate it. We all share, everyone in this room shares a love of documentaries. And finally, after years and years of people making incredible documentaries, I think they're finally getting noticed as the art form that they truly are.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's the golden age of documentaries, as people, lots of people have said. And, you know, thanks to things like Netflix and Hulu and Amazon, I mean, there's just an appetite like there hasn't, we've never seen.
Well, you couldn't find them before unless you went to, like, tonight, the Music Box Theater. You'd have to go out to get them, and it was hard to find them.
No, that's exactly right. But nothing replaces the experience of seeing them in a theater.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, it's just the wonderful. The Music Box is a great venue. The film is amazing. I'll let Anthony talk a little bit about that.
Well, what we try and do at Doc 10 is have guests with the films. You know, so there's whether it's the filmmakers or a musician who's some, you know, tied to the film, subjects who are actually in the film.
Yep.
And you see these live people, you know, who you've just seen on the screen, and it really takes it out of the screen, kind of into your life.
I think that Q&A session that happens so often with the documentaries really makes it so much more dimensional, doesn't it really?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's what we try and do at all the films. And tonight's screening, the filmmaker, the director and the producer will be there.
Good.
And we were hoping to have some comedians come from, you know, Second City, Chicago. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, maybe someone will show up as a surprise. But
maybe
either way,
should go, Bill.
Oh, I think you should definitely
All right,
go.
I'm in. You talked me into it. It's just that simple. Let's talk especially about this film, The Last Laugh, this documentary, because it deals with not just comedy, but what is taboo in comedy and what are things that you just have to be a little more sensitive about, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Really, the jumping off point has to do with Nazis.
Yeah.
Always a good joke.
Always.
Always a good joke.
Yep. Good launch point.
And I couldn't really deliver the Sarah Silverman joke here on the line because I'm no Sarah Silverman, but she is really funny, and she says some stuff that someone might find offensive, but I think one of the things the film kind of addresses is, you know, with time comes acceptance.
Yeah.
And the filmmaker really felt like she couldn't make the movie even as soon as 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until really just recently where she felt like, you know, we could make some jokes about this.
Why? What happened in those 5 years that all of a sudden it's a little more safe? The waters are a little more chartered, and it's okay to make fun of certain things that you couldn't 5 years ago. Did something happen?
I think comedians have been approaching everything from 9/11, which, you know, that's even much sooner, and making people laugh a week after the election.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a couple of weeks ago, I watched Saturday Night Live, and, you know, they were right on target for a lot of people. That was really too soon.
Yeah.
But you know, it was funny.
Yep.
It was. And you can't change what has happened. And I think about this like when you go to a funeral, like at my mom's funeral. It was really sad, but there are people that would come up and tell a funny story. So even though, yeah, I'm sad that my mom died, but I want to hear this goofy story. We all kind of try to make a situation laughable Isn't that what we're doing throughout all of life?
Right. I think that there's a real hope in comedy. You know, when you can joke about it, it kind of lifts it above the depressing part of it. And, you know, I really think this question of, you know, can you do comedy in the face of horror, of true horror, is a, you know, pretty apt one for us to be asking.
In the movie, there is a survivor in the film who takes us through kind of her experience. And she delivers some of the best laugh lines in the film.
Really? Would you agree that Lenny Bruce was probably the one who made everything turn just a little bit? He was the first one to take to the stage and took subjects that were so taboo and so unexplored and just went, not only are we going to explore them, we're going to tear them upside out.
Yeah, I'm no expert on Lenny Bruce, but he was really challenged the norms and, you know, hit those taboos definitely ahead of his time, right? Mm-hmm.
You know, but thinking back in the Lenny Bruce time, you know, he was the first to do that and shock people with what he said, basically. And then other comics followed and did that. And now we're in a period where sometimes people think we're too politically correct. So are we moving backwards where comics might be afraid to tackle a topic?
I think if you look at Louis C.K. or Sarah Silverman, these can be, and Chris Rock, they're not afraid. They're all in the film, and they're all hilarious, and they're not afraid of offending anyone.
Yeah,
I think
we need it.
Yeah, I think that's where that's where release comes in. That's where catharsis comes in.
The other day, Grant Tinker died, who was in charge of MTM, Mary Tyler Moore's production company, and then later ran NBC for a little bit. But we played the clip of the Mary Tyler Moore show when Chuckles the Clown had died, and there's the funeral scene that Mary can't stop laughing at. And I think that was a big turning point on television anyway, even though now when you play it, it's not subtle, but it's something you go, wow, did they really take chances there? But for the 70s, they did. They were saying death is something that is inevitable, and I guess it's okay to make fun of it, and they did.
And there was, not long ago, there was, just last few months ago, the Norman Lear documentary, which, you know, was all about All in the Family, and, you know, this pioneering comedy that was offensive, and you know, here we had this character who was racist and sexist, and a lot of people were able to face those issues through that comedy.
Right.
It's a great talk. It's called Just Another Version of You, and it just you forget all that he has been responsible for in terms of pushing the boundaries of great television and tackling these issues. And it's just it's a wonderful film to be reminded of all that the progression we've made in TV, and hopefully what we'll continue to do now.
But how about this? A good storyteller, and Norman Lear was certainly a great storyteller, made a character that was so despicable. Archie Bunker was not a pleasant human being, but you so cared for him just because you got to see what made him what he was, you know, and a good documentary will do that too. It'll show you kind of every version of whatever the focal point is, right?
I think it touches on the humanity of the person, if it can, like if it can evoke that kind of empathy or understanding, you know, it's because that character feels very three-dimensional to us. And you know, again, you can understand a bit of where they came from or how they got to that point.
Yeah.
Not that you necessarily agree with it, but I think you have to go there first in order to move beyond it, to figure out, you know, ways through it, if you will.
And when you watched Archie Bunker, you would see maybe if you had some feelings like that, you'd go, boy, I shouldn't be thinking that way. So it's kind of to better yourself as well.
That's right. I think it's very cathartic for
absolutely.
Some people.
I was trying to think of a good example of a documentary where you have a character or people who, you know, initially seem difficult or challenging, and yet through the course of the film, you kind of sympathize with them.
Yeah.
And we actually just locked our first film for next year's Doc 10 Film Festival at the end of March. And it's called The Island of the Whales, The Island and the Whales. And it's about a community that slaughters whales for their sustenance. And seeing some of those scenes, you're thinking, oh, this is horrible what they're doing. And yet, you really understand this community, and then you start to sympathize with them. And then when wow. Pamela Anderson shows up and says they need to stop,
as a flotation device or what?
No, she's an activist protecting the whales.
She is really into it.
Right. And so she shows up, and you're like, what is Pamela Anderson doing here? And so you end up, your sympathies end up, you know, with the people maybe over Pamela.
But sometimes a documentary will do the opposite. I'm sure you're aware of Capturing the Freedmans, that shows your average typical American family, and then as the movie progresses, you go, uh-oh, there's some problems with that family, you know?
Absolutely.
We're talking about the Doc 10 Film Festival. We'll give you more information in just a little bit, but you need to see it. It's fantastic. More after this. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Paula Frolia is here, co-founder and CEO of the second annual Doc 10 Film Festival. Anthony Kaufman also here, the film programmer. So much to talk about. Number one, what exactly is the Chicago Media Project? I know that's your website, chicagomediaproject.org. What is it, and how do people get involved in it?
So Chicago Media Project is a not-for-profit organization for people who love documentary films and believe in the power of their ability to bring about social change. And so we are a member-based organization. There are just over 50 of us, and these are folks who believe in supporting docs through things like going to the movie tonight, providing grants directly to the filmmakers to help them get the films finished, and also investing in documentaries, because it's really, now's the time.
Yeah.
So you talk about social change with some of these documentaries, and I don't remember the name of that whale film you had just brought up.
Yeah, Islands and the Whales.
And that's going to be coming up at the Doc 10 event, which is happening at the end of March. So is anything going to change because of that film? I know I was telling you off the air, when you watch a documentary, you need to kind of put yourself in someone else's shoes and see life through their eyes. I cannot stand the thought of whales being killed and butchered, but I don't depend on that for my well-being and my living. And, you know, so is it going to change anything? Is it just going to make us aware of issues that are out there? How does that work?
I think, as you said, it's all about walking in someone else's shoes, and maybe I'll let Paula respond in terms of social change, but that's not, you know, going to change the world, but maybe that's a first step in sort of understanding other people.
Why and, people do something.
Yeah, and understanding other people's beliefs and being more sympathetic and empathetic, and maybe that's, you know, a first step.
You know where it worked for me? Remember the documentary that Lily Tomlin made about the treatment of elephants a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
That I had no idea that was going on, and I watched that documentary, and all of a sudden, I'm so careful about it.
And look, they've taken elephants out of circuses now.
Yeah.
I mean, it really does. It really can lead. I mean, because a lot of times, how many times do you hear people say, I just saw this documentary and I had no idea, right? It's that it provides this window in on something that you really had no idea about. And nowadays, documentary filmmakers really use a lot of the narrative storytelling techniques. So the films are really compelling and engaging in a way that, along with learning about something you didn't know, you actually get to experience the lives of really rich and interesting people.
Yeah. I know this isn't fair to ask because we only have a couple of minutes, but part of this film, The Last Laugh, which deals with the taboos of comedy, features a Jerry Lewis film called The Day the Clown Cried. I heard about the story when I was in college. I've still never seen the film. I've seen clips of it. I know it's very, very hard to see this film. It's impossible to see this film. But if you wouldn't mind, explain a little bit about what The Day the Clown Cried is, the Jerry Lewis film.
I think you should explain that.
Should I?
Yeah.
All right. So he made a movie about a guy. Jerry Lewis made a movie. Now, this was Jerry Lewis, as we all know, the funny, wacky, crazy Jerry Lewis, made a movie that wasn't meant to be funny or wacky or crazy, about a guy whose job it was to lure people into the ovens in the death camps in Germany. Mm-hmm. And they made this movie, and it was just a disaster. And they buried it. I guess there's only two or maybe three copies of it. It's impossible.
I think
to
it's
see.
Out on YouTube.
I think it was just recently rediscovered. So it's a little more accessible now. Yep.
Yeah. So
I saw parts of it, and
I've seen some clips too.
It's really uncomfortable.
It's disturbing. Yeah.
But again, putting yourself in someone else's shoes. Now, I can't recall, was he there to lure them in, or was he there to entertain them while they were waiting for their death?
A little bit of both. I mean, they were using them to get people into the showers.
Yeah, to distract people away from where they were headed.
Yeah.
You know, another one of the key films excerpted in The Last Laugh, the film tonight, is Life is Beautiful, which mm-hmm. becomes this big talking point. You know, are you for or against it? Do you think it's funny or do you think it's offensive?
Yeah, similar subject matter in Life is Beautiful. Mm-hmm. And a movie, Jacob the Liar, that Robin Williams made also covers very similar territory as well.
But that's not funny.
No.
But Life is Beautiful is supposed to be funny.
Yeah.
And I think, that's debatable.
Yeah.
We have to laugh. I mean, I know everybody's saying that we're too politically correct. You know what? You shouldn't say something that's going to offend someone, and you should try to treat others as you want to be treated, the golden rule. But when you're watching art and you're watching these things, it is important to see how the other side thinks. I think that's the open line to communication.
One of the lessons of the film is if you're going to make an offensive joke, it's got to be really good.
Super funny.
Yeah.
That's
the caveat.
Super funny.
Yeah, no doubt about it. If people want to see The Last Laugh, they do it by doing what exactly?
They go to the Music Box website and look for the listing.
Musicboxtheater.com.
Yes.
Or just they just show up. Yep. 7:15 tonight.
Good.
A preview of what's to come at the end of March, which is the whole Doc 10 Film Festival. Go see The Last Laugh tonight, Music Box Theater, musicboxtheater.com. Or as Anthony mentioned, you can just walk up and get tickets at the door.
So two websites we need to give out, chicagomediaproject.org is one, and the other one is doc10.org. Both of them will give you the information you're looking for. Paula, great to meet you. Anthony, great to meet you. And I hope the 50 does do something good with my daughter at school.
Sure.
I really
absolutely
do.
No problem.
Give him another 50, and she'll do better.
And she'll
get an
A.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Nice to meet you.
Break, and then some news, and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thank you, Steve. That was Steve Bertrand. He used to host of the Wintrust Business Lunch. That'll be heard at 12:05 right here on this station. Kevin just gave me some what to me is bad news. I don't know that it would affect you that much, but it made me sad. I was sad. I still am. And that was almost a moment ago that he gave me the bad news.
I don't know how to even take you anymore. Can
what?
I just tell you? You just
Why do you say
I never
that?
I fall for everything you say, and now I don't.
Well, this
What's
is
bad news?
Sad,
does it involve the show tomorrow? Because I'm not here.
Sad news? No, I know you're off tomorrow. This is news that would have affected the show right now, but it ends up not. We had a chance for the Cubs championship trophy to be in the studio with us. It was in the building. Was it on the fourth floor, Kevin?
That's what I'm told. Yeah,
it was on the fourth floor where they always bring championship trophies. Mm. And Kevin found out about it and said, hey, bring it down so Bill and Wendy can gaze upon the championship trophy. And for some reason, what was there a reason they gave that they couldn't do it?
I think at the time they were here for like a photo opportunity for the Trib, I guess.
Are you able to look in my picture in the monitor?
What
Bertrand
happened?
Got one.
Steve.
He got a picture of. I wouldn't. I would look at it. I wouldn't take a picture.
Can, Wendy, that is the smartest thing that you have said or that I've heard in a long time.
I thought you'd be mad at me.
No, because.
What's the problem with the picture? You don't like how you look?
No, I went up there. I realized when I came back up after seeing it that I started looking at the picture. I didn't even look at the trophy.
You just captured it on film, but you didn't take a moment to just say, wow, I'm in a room with history right now.
Because you hand the phone to the woman on the other side. She takes your picture. You smile and you move on.
Yeah
chop, chop.
And I realized I didn't even take a moment to, you couldn't touch it.
They wouldn't let you touch it?
No.
And why would you? I mean, show some respect.
Well, I'd like to chip off one of the flags or something to bring on.
So is it already been engraved, Steve? You didn't notice.
I don't even know what color it was.
Steve, I got to tell you, you are just, I mean, think back of when you were, I know your son has been in some plays and stuff. You're sometimes behind the video camera with your kids as well.
Yeah.
And you watch back and see it, but you're like, damn it, I should have taken it all in.
Right.
I'm trying to be more aware of that, and I could have had just as good of experience just looking at it.
At the risk of
but
sounding...
But you gotta post it on Facebook. That's why you do these stupid pictures.
Exactly. Just to prove, you know, what is that? The one-upsmanship or whatever.
Yeah.
Neener, neener, neener.
At the risk of sounding like a cranky old man sitting on his porch throwing rocks at kids who are getting their baseball off my lawn... For the first time today... We've now become a world that does exactly what Steve just described.
It's
this
true.
Is now a world where we're not enjoying the moment, we're recording the moment.
Can I tell you when we were in Nashville and Michael and I were in the...
can I say also that Anthony Rizzo and Chris Bryant were up there?
Don't even say
oh,
that.
Oh, no, those are the pictures. That's I would have gotten a little Cub sandwich.
You're fibbing. You're fibbing.
That's not true. That part's not true.
Fibberoni.
Oh, right. See, I'm done listening to both of you.
Why?
Because you both suck.
No, it was Addison Russell.
Oh, all right. Well, that's all right.
I seriously believe everything you guys tell me, and I don't know why. I really don't.
You've spent enough time with myself and with
Steve
and
with Kevin.
I know
not to believe you, but I do believe you,
right.
And then I get mad at myself.
Nah.
Don't be mad at yourself. Don't beat yourself
when,
up.
As I was saying before, I was so rudely interrupted with a lie.
Yeah, I'm
a
gullible.
Gullible's Travels, that's the book they wrote about me. Mm-hmm. My brother and sister said that to me, honestly, when I was like, I couldn't even talk yet. And they said, there's that book written about you. Gullible's Travels. Oh, shush. When we were in Nashville at Two Old Hippies, this great little clothing store / guitar emporium, Michael and I were there and saw Joe Walsh.
Yeah.
And honestly, I wanted to, both of us now are going, God, we should have gotten a picture. But at the time, I go, Michael, I don't want to bug him. You know, let's just talk to him and have a conversation. And he will always remember that. But then it's like he's bummed that he didn't get a picture.
No. But just the mere fact you spent a moment or two with
I know,
them,
it was awesome. But then, you know, like the one time at my beach club when I caught the biggest fish ever and both of our iPhones ran out of charge and I didn't have a picture. I swear to God, it was a catfish and it was over a foot long.
Yeah.
And no one believes me. Because I don't have proof. Kevin, didn't you run into some celebrity somewhere?
I was going to say, I saw Jack White at the airport a few months ago, and I was the only one. I just said, oh my God, that's Jack White. And nobody reacted to it, and he looked right at me like he didn't want to be bothered and just kept walking.
All right, so that moment where you're capturing somebody, whether it's Jack White or no matter who it is.
Joe Walsh.
John Duffy was in yesterday with pictures of himself with Bruce Springsteen.
But that wasn't an arranged thing.
Right.
You paid for that picture.
Right. But my question is, when you're taking those photos, is it part to say, here's an important moment in my life where I got to meet an idol? Or is it part to say to your friends, as Steve pointed out, look who I'm hanging with?
Oh, yeah, it's a show-off.
It is, isn't it? It kind of is.
Totally. Because, come on, before we had cell phones, we weren't walking around with... You know, I guess if you're on vacation, you had a camera, maybe.
Right.
But just your everyday life, you wouldn't be having a camera on you. So
Right. You'd
come back and say, oh, I was at this store and I chatted with Joe Walsh for a while. And people go, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
And they believed you. But now, unless you have proof, no one would believe you.
You could name, like, the biggest celebrities of all time, unless you have photo evidence of it. People are like, yeah, sure.
I am starting a movement.
What's your movement?
I want everybody to stop taking pictures.
We're done with pictures.
Yeah.
Enjoy the moment. No reason to record it.
You don't need to have a video or a picture on your Facebook page. Just write witty things. Am I asking too much?
I don't think a day's gone by in the last 2 or 3 years that somebody on Facebook hasn't had their picture taken with either Tom Hanks, Bill Murray, or both of them. Every day I'm on Facebook, I'm like, oh, look at there.
Why that. Tom Hanks?
I don't know. He just shows up. Like, he just, if three people are gathered in his name, he shows up now. Tom Hanks just comes to your house.
Can we get him on the show?
Yeah. We need, well, there's me and you, Kevin, and I have to think of him too. But yeah, we could do that.
Do we have to think of him all at the same
time?
Yeah,
you're supposed to. Yeah.
Get some here quicker. We'll work on that during our lunch break.
Get some here quicker. Now, a couple of times, this is what made me think of this. Kevin was upset because he wanted to see the world championship trophy, and I was upset. But you, as you've mentioned, are a big White Sox fan. You were kind about the Cubs throughout their playoff and World Series run. But would that move you at all if the trophy was in here? Would you feel stirred at all by that or not?
I would look at it because it's the World Series championship trophy.
Yeah.
And great for the Cubs. Again, as I tell everyone, the best team in baseball should win the World Series, and it happened this year.
It did happen this year.
But this is it. This is the only year I'm giving you.
But on the years, all right, I've had three situations now where I'm in the room with the Stanley Cup, and I don't know quite how to react because it is history, but it's also just a big chunk of metal. So I'm excited that I'm seeing the Stanley Cup, which is world famous, and it represents hockey's most elite. But at the same time, it's not like it's a guy where I could go, hey, you know what, I like your work. It's just a...
Why don't you do that next time it comes back?
I would do that.
And you know what else you should do?
What?
You should just sit in it.
Yeah,
right in front of the guy who guards it. Because, you know, they put babies in it. Why don't you just sit in it?
All right.
God, you would get the crap beat out of you in about a second.
By the guards, by other members of the NHL, by people walking by.
Yeah.
Everybody would line. They'd line up.
And quite honestly, the World Series trophy and the Stanley Cup, it gets out a lot. So there are a lot of people that get pictures of it. I have seen people with the Stanley Cup pictures before I had a Stanley Cup picture.
I know.
So it does travel and go to bars and concerts and stuff. Oh, I know the Stanley Cup does. Does the World Series trophy go out to like a Jimmy Buffett show with Chris Bryant or something?
I remember when the White Sox won it, there were a few scattered pictures of people with it. But with the Stanley Cup, there was a time where every single person I know had a picture with the Stanley Cup. There was
I know.
I don't know how they did it, but everybody I know.
Well, I know how they did it because each player and Coach Q, everybody gets it for a couple
for a day.
Of days. It's just a day.
I think a day.
And so, you know, spread that out from where everybody's from. They make a big announcement where it's going to be.
And
lo and behold, you're waiting in line for 5 hours and you get your picture taken with it.
Yeah, that's it.
I want to drink a beer out of it. Like, fill it up with beer.
See if they'll allow that.
They can touch it and pour it.
Yeah.
It'd be kind of like a shotgun.
Your job would just
bong.
Be to chug it.
Yeah.
All right.
It's pretty big, though.
We'll
how many ounces
that.
You think that is?
I think you could do it.
Bigger than a tall boy?
Oh, yeah. You could do it. All right. Look at all the people online. Stay where you are. We'll get to your calls. We're at 312-981-7200. We'd love to hear from you. We just missed our chance with the World Series trophy. I'm a little upset. Wendy's taking it okay. What are your thoughts? Give us a call or a text. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, what were we talking about? Taking pictures of things, and why can't we just live in the moment?
That's
why do we have to take photos of everything?
That's right.
I think Lori agrees with that. Hi, Lori.
Good morning, Bill and Wendy. I so much enjoy listening to you guys.
Thank you, Lori.
We were just down in Kentucky a couple months ago to see the new Noah's Ark, this one that they built.
Mm-hmm.
It's huge.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, everywhere we walked around it, now that everybody has a cell phone, everybody has a camera.
Yeah.
And you couldn't even get close to anything because there'd be 30 people taking pictures. And they would be taking pictures not just of an item, but of every single sign.
Isn't that something?
Yeah. Well, everybody has to document everything for the documentary they're making.
That's the thing. What do you do with all this stuff?
It sits on a hard drive somewhere and you forget you even have the pictures.
Precisely. Or you have a friend whose kid gets married, you're not invited, and you say, I just want to see what they look like. And they bring you to the entire album. So you don't want to be rude, but you really don't care what Aunt Martha looks like. You know, and that Uncle Bud was half in the bag. You know what I mean?
But Lori,
I think there should be a thing on, let's hold off on the pictures for a while. It just gets... Yeah.
Lori, I don't know if you
actually stopped taking pictures.
Did your family ever do this? Because my mom's family was big into this. They would take a trip somewhere, and then you'd go to their house, and they would do a slide presentation. You'd see 80 or 90 or 100 slides of their trip to...
You're taking it back.
No wonder you don't like visiting your relatives.
That could be part of it. Oh, good, a slide presentation.
You've already seen them, and who cares? You know?
I know.
I mean, okay, you guys got the money. You got to go to Hawaii. We got to go to the Dells. You know?
Yeah, I know.
Lori, thank you so much for listening and for calling today. All right, these are some celebrities that... weren't shot on film or on your video. I can't talk anymore. Eric, go ahead. It's your turn. I'm done. I bailed. Eric, you used to work in a place where you saw a lot of celebs. Did you take their pictures?
Yep. But I didn't take any pictures. I was too busy working.
Where was this, Eric?
Sitting.
Where?
Well, I worked in Cleveland.
Yeah.
God forbid.
Where a lot of celebrities go.
And boy, are your arms tired.
They are. And then I went to Kansas City.
Yes.
So, you know, I met the Boston Celtics, the Royals, the, you know, Buster Douglas. Don King came in one day. You know, it doesn't matter to me. Let them do what they need to do and get on with their life. Okay?
What sort of a job did you have that you saw all these celebrities?
I was a gate agent. I was a baggage handler.
Oh, at an airport?
I was the person in charge of taking these important people to a room so nobody would bother them.
Yeah.
I've done it all.
Yeah.
So
it would be bad if that was your job and you, for every celebrity that came through, you're like, you don't mind a picture, right? That would be kind of an imposition, I guess.
Well, I just think, you know, people, whether you're, you know, Anthony Rizzo or whoever, you want to lead a normal life, as humanly possible.
Sure.
Okay, great. I don't want every person coming up to me, you know, can I have your picture? No, you can't have my picture. Go away.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I went to Vegas, best story of my life, I'm coming out of a casino, and I see this tall, rather rotund Greek fellow. He said, would you split a cab with me to, I forget where we were going. I said, sure. Turned out to be Jimmy the Greek. Okay, great. I didn't ask for his picture. I didn't ask for his autograph.
But he gave it to you. Pre-signed.
Take this.
No, you know, we split the cab and we went on about our merry little way. So,
but now you worked at an airport, so you saw a lot of celebrities coming and going. And you're absolutely right. This is your job. Let them be. Give them some privacy. Let them take their stupid flight. But what if you were at a bar and somebody you loved came in? You wouldn't, you know, who do you have a crush on?
Well, you, Wendy, of course.
Oh. Right.
I mean, a celebrity, like a movie star.
You are my celebrity.
All right, Eric, we got to go, but thank you.
I listen to talk radio, and that's pretty much what I do. So,
but you wouldn't want a picture with Wendy if that opportunity arose. You wouldn't say, yeah, let's take a picture.
If it arose, if it was there and she was free,
she's free, believe me.
Shut up.
I am not going to come to the WGN studios and knock on the window incessantly saying, Wendy, I need a picture. Come here. You know,
you might just get me that way. Because if you're at a bar, you said people should enjoy and go about their business. Maybe I would say, Eric, you don't like pictures, so forget it. Everyone but Eric, let's pose for pictures.
Don't do that.
Oh, okay. But that's fine, you know. Hey, I talked to Wendy today. Okay. My day's good.
That's all you need.
Boy, you have a sad little life, don't you,
don't
Eric? Oh,
don't say that.
Well, you know, I wouldn't really call it sad. You know, I've survived two heart transplants, and my life is good right now. So
awesome
I'm
for
alive.
You.
That's good news. And you met Jimmy the Greek.
And I met Jimmy the Greek, so how much better can it get?
And that's weird because his last name is Snyder, too. So maybe someday, Eric, our paths will cross, and you know what? You can take a picture with me.
You know what? The next time I'm in Chicago, I will bring a sign and hold it up and say, I talked to you on the radio. When you have a free moment, give you my number. Text me. We'll get a picture. How about that?
Perfect.
That works. Eric, thank you.
Take care of your
heart.
Have
a good holiday. And your heart will take care of you. That's what we say in the heart business.
I got one more that you have to, because seriously, I understand what Eric's saying. It's part of his job. I mean, even when celebrities come in here, we do take a picture, and I'm glad that Kevin handles that, but it's embarrassing sometimes.
Yeah.
But what if somebody just showed up at your house? Joe, who did you meet?
I was on my honeymoon in Carmel. And he was really big into photography, and the person who house we were staying at knew Ansel Adams.
Wow.
Where he lived. So he drove us down there. We drive down his road, and here, lo and behold, here comes Ansel Adams driving up. I knew his car. I knew his license plate.
Stalker much, Joe?
Yeah. Well, it's pretty famous because it was named after one of his books. But anyway, he stopped, met us. I was huge into photography, never got a picture of him. Had my camera with me, and I figured, I'm trespassing on your road. I'm not going to take a picture. Just meeting him was the highlight of my honeymoon, believe me.
But his business is taking pictures.
Is the marriage still going? I have to know if this is the highlight of his honeymoon.
That was 1981. Yeah, still married.
All right.
Good for you.
It was just, I mean, to see him just driving up the road and talk to us, didn't get mad at us.
Nice.
You know, and of all things, the world's most famous photographer, and you don't get, never got a picture.
That's pretty wild.
You should have had him take the picture. That's what he does.
A selfie.
Right.
Yeah. Well, it hurt me to go into his studio in Carmel and buy a book for $100 that had his autograph in it. So,
wow,
that's pretty cool.
You know, but it was amazing, and you know, a lot of people I've told that story to. Oh yeah, right. But at least my wife was there to back
me
up.
She can prove it.
So, can I get a witness? Yeah. You did,
Joe. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Have a nice holiday.
Let's do this. We'll take a quick break. We've got news coming up. Kim's got the news, and then there's a lot more show.
He knows which movies make you laugh and which ones make you cry. If you love- love films and Dean's your guy. So grab yourself some popcorn. He will not talk about hard boys' teeth.
Your transaction has been approved.
Dean just sent you a thank you card. What's that all about?
Imagine my embarrassment when I called and it was Wendy's voice on the other line.
I called that same number once and it was Max Armstrong. Isn't that something?
Yeah. Hog bellies means a whole new thing.
Yes, it does.
And the weird thing is Bill didn't hang up.
No, I stayed on the line.
Max is very personable.
Yes, he is. And gentle.
He's very
okay.
He's very gentle.
Wow. Dean Richards. In his line. No,
his
don't tell
rig.
Us. Don't tell us. Dean Richards is with us. We're here to talk about
combine.
Movies. No, don't.
Concubine.
Don't. But, Dean, you're taking a big trip, and it turns out Wendy's husband's going to be in the same exact place as you are.
Yeah, we're vacationing. We're vacationing together. And I didn't even have to pay him like I just did Wendy.
No, he comes much cheaper.
We're both going to the Lucas Ranch in Northern California to see the new Star Wars movie, Rogue One. And we'll see the movie tomorrow night.
Yeah.
And we'll have a romantic dinner afterwards and then interview the cast the next day.
Oh, that's going to be fun. Have you been there?
The whole cast will be there, right?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
That's what I'm told.
Have you been to the Lucas Ranch before?
I never have. I never have. I thought he was moving it all here to Chicago.
Well,
then it turns out that's not going to happen.
That didn't happen. Nope.
So, I'm super excited. I understand that Jim has been there, though. So
with me, I've attended as well.
Oh, you've been too.
Yes. It's beautiful and spacious, and there's Skywalker wine, and there's cattle. It's beautiful. It's a hidden gem, and like you wouldn't know. It's not like gleaming, pointing lights going, here's Skywalker Ranch. It's very beautiful.
Sure, very unassuming. Just north of San Francisco.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Now, here's a question. George Lucas has been fairly vocal about the fact that he wasn't really involved as much as he wanted to be in the last Star Wars film. So is his involvement a little bit more or less in this new one?
So.
No,
you know, but Wendy may know more about this than me, but I don't think really there's virtually any involvement anymore except his name. Disney owns the whole thing now.
Right.
And
Does he know they're having the screening at his house?
I don't think he read the fine print in the contract.
Uh-oh.
But you know, Disney owns Marvel Comics now.
Yeah.
Disney bought this and they're Disney-fying it all, which is, I'm definitely not saying a bad thing. They know how to market these things. They're expanding it. You know, they're creating these standalone films outside of the original franchise.
Mm-hmm.
This one is, Rogue One is supposed to be set between episodes 3 and 4 and is about a group of rebels trying to steal the plans for the dreaded Death Star that we know from episodes 4, 5, and 6, if I've got all my numbers correctly. If not, I'm sure I'll have about 50,000 emails from Star Wars fans correcting me in a few minutes. But I'm pretty sure that's what it is. But if you know Star Wars, you know the dreaded Death Star, and you know that's kind of focused on this. Their next standalone film is going to be about young Han Solo. So I kind of like what they're doing, and I don't really I don't see them, you know, diluting the franchise. I think it's in good hands.
Some characters that we know from other Star Wars movies are in this one. It's mostly new characters, but for the most part, it's a mixture, right? Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would say it's mostly new, but it's younger versions of some of the characters.
Millennial Star Wars. That's what they're calling it.
Yeah.
Star Millennial. The Millennial Falcon.
There you go.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how I feel about Disney mixing in some of their Disney characters into this. I don't remember Goofy being on the Millennium Falcon at all.
He wasn't.
Or Donald Duck? Was Donald Duck ever a stormtrooper?
I don't think so.
I don't remember that myself.
No.
Wouldn't that be great, though, if you see a young Han Solo and instead of Chewie just traveling next to him, it is Goofy?
But I have to say,
hi, Pluto!
I saw the clip of Darth Vader singing Bare Necessities, and it's fantastic.
Right. Still racist.
Is it? Yeah, it is kind of, I guess. Yeah. It is kind of. All right. So I'm glad that, boy, that sounds exciting to go to this. Where else would you want to see this movie?
Super excited. Super, super excited.
It's going
to
be great.
Not only to see this movie, I don't know that I'm quite as big a fan as, you know, as Jimmy Mack, but I'm definitely a fan.
You are a fan, which surprised me.
I am definitely a fan. I am definitely a fan, but I can, you know, I'm going to be lost if he starts getting into the nuances of, you know, certain things. I love them. I appreciate them. I'm super excited for this to come out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we'll see. Hopefully I don't hate it.
Good. We all hope.
How would that be?
That would be terrible.
That would be bad.
That's going to make for an awkward dinner with me and Jimmy Mack if I come out of it and I think it stinks.
Yeah.
Well, Jim wants to interview you for Rebel Force Radio, so make sure the interview happens before you
see
it.
Do the interview first before I hate it?
Yes.
Right.
Please.
That'll go over big on Rebel Force Radio. Yeah, we're going to interview somebody who hates this.
I don't know how you could hate it, though. I mean, I've really liked, I know there's three you don't really
enjoy.
Three
out of the seven have been awful.
Awful's a strong word.
Yeah.
Which one? Phantom Menace?
Yeah.
I think that one was bona fide awful.
Yeah.
The others were not so great.
Was that when we first met Jar Jar?
Yeah. First and last.
I can't remember
any of
this
stuff. Pretty quick.
Yeah, I've seen all of them
Jar Jar was awful.
Yeah.
That said, I am going to buy the Jar Jar key ring.
Oh, you have to. Why wouldn't you? Are you kidding?
I hope they have a thimble, a Jar Jar Binks thimble. Because I'm telling you right now, if you're on my Christmas list, you're getting some Star Wars crap on it for Christmas.
With a note that says, a thimble of my appreciation, your friend Dean Richards.
Oh, that's genius.
Wouldn't that be nice?
That's sweet.
Dean Richards is here. We're talking movies. If you want to jump in, 312-7200, back after this.
We are talking to Dean Richards, and we're talking about movies that are opening, and what do we need to know about what's going on?
There's not a lot going on this week, surprisingly, right before the holidays, because they're in the next two weeks, really, there are going to be so many amazing movies that are opening up. I just saw Denzel Washington's Fences, which is going to be one of the big Oscar movies of the year. I just saw Jessica Chastain's Miss Sloan, an amazing, like, straightaway drama. I'll tell you a lot more about them as we get a little closer to their openings. But this week, we have one movie that they're not even showing to the critics called Incarnate with Aaron Eckhart. And it looks like kind of a horror film. I honestly don't even know that much about it since they're not showing it to us. But also Shia LaBeouf has a movie that's opening this week. It's really under the wires. It's only in four theaters in the Chicago area, so if you're interested in seeing this, you really sort of have to search to find a theater for it. But it is, I'm afraid, a not very well done story about an Afghanistan Afghani veteran who comes back to the U.S. with a post-traumatic stress disorder. Ultimately, if you can stay with this really badly told story, flashbacks. You know how some films, they have flashbacks,
sure,
back and forth,
yeah,
and you're not sure if you're in the future, in the past, and what does this have to do with that? That's kind of how this movie is. I think it's the construction of this film, the script of this film, takes away what could have been a much more important story about how war leaves people an emotional mess, leaving them with this very, very important and serious disorder, the post-traumatic stress disorder.
Mm-hmm.
It could have been a much more powerful story about that, and it winds up not being, really. I'm only giving it a C-.
Okay.
Shia LaBeouf, the performances are great.
I like him. Yeah. Is he doing better in his personal life?
Seems to. He's still, you know, definitely orbiting in his own stratosphere. But there's no denying he's an amazing actor, and you know that's one thing with this movie. I mean, you stay with it despite the fact that it's confusing and kind of boring because his performance is so great. And then when the story finally begins to make sense, which is really at the end of the movie, you just don't care about the story anymore. But when you leave it, you know, you go, it was a good performance. I wish the story had been told better. So, huge disappointment with that. So, new movies for this weekend, not that exciting. I'm going to say, if you're interested in seeing some of the movies that are out this week. Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them is still racking it up at the box office.
Dean, I saw that the other night.
Yeah, what'd you think of it?
I liked it. I had a lot of the same feelings you had, that it was really fun to watch, a beautiful movie to watch, had its flaws. But the thing that I kept thinking is, I don't remember ever seeing a movie that shot 1920s New York as beautifully as this did.
Right.
And then I find out later, not a single frame of it is shot in New York.
Yeah.
None of it.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? I think they shot a few exteriors, but they are far and few between. Hmm. But visually, the movie is fantastic. And Harry Potter fans really seem to be loving this way, way, way more than I did. I liked it. I wasn't nuts about it. But I think that's definitely one worth seeing for the whole family. Moana, the animated film, is great.
Is it really?
It really is great. It's one of the better animated, one of the best animated films of the year. Arrival, the Amy Adams, Jeremy Renner film, is really interesting. Hacksaw Ridge is still out there if you haven't seen that. Who doesn't want to see a massively a graphic war film right before the holidays?
Sure. Good timing.
Kind of make you feel better about your own family's disagreements.
Right.
Andrew Garfield, that's another one that's amazing. I'm saying pass on Bad Santa 2.
Really?
Was really disappointed, and I was a huge fan of the first movie. Hugely disappointed in that. Allied, the Brad Pitt and Marianne Cotillard film, I think is nothing special. Edge of 17, it's a story about a teenager out of place in high school. It's not really a coming-of-age film, but it's really well done, really well told, really well written. That's another one that's great. And I saw I saw the new musical out of the Paramount Theater yesterday.
Oh, The Little Mermaid?
And The Little Mermaid. They stage these great shows for the holiday season because they know people have a little more time.
Yeah.
Take the families out, go see a play. This is just perfect for the entire family. It's based on the Disney animated film, but they do such a nice job telling the story about the mermaid that falls in love with a handsome prince. It's a true story, by the way.
Oh, it is a true story.
It's a true story. the mermaid who makes a deal with a sea witch,
yep,
so she can be with her true love, the handsome
Prince Eric
on land.
Yeah.
And the performers are just great. The production, the staging. They do a lot of wire work in the show.
Oh, they do?
So it makes it seem like they're swimming.
Oh.
With the way they do the lighting and the special effects and everything on stage and this wire work, it looks like they're actually swimming in water, which is
that's excellent.
Really cool. And I think the kids I got a big kick out of it.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Well, now that he loves The Little Mermaid so much, you should get him that Zulily Mermaid throw for Christmas, Bill.
Dean, I haven't bought you a gift yet. I may get you one of those.
I would love that.
All right.
I would love that.
They're functional and they're attractive.
Fun and functional.
Yeah, they are. They're both.
Those are the best kinds of gifts.
Aren't they?
As we all know, the two Fs.
That's Dean Richards.
Safe travels.
Safe travels over to the Skywalker Ranch.
Fun, fun, fun.
Absolutely.
May the force be with you.
We'll talk when you get back, Dean.
Bye.
All right. More after this. Thanks, Kim. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. We are waiting. Some words from Donald Trump. President-elect Donald Trump will be speaking soon, Wendy. And quickly, I feel so bad about something. Yesterday was Kim Gordon's anniversary, and I didn't know that.
Oh, my goodness.
And
you are a complete
Bill. I don't know if anybody mentioned it on the air. Happy anniversary, Kim.
Thanks so much, Bill.
You're welcome.
Listen, it was a lovely day.
Yep.
I swear to God, we mentioned it throughout the whole rest of the show. I don't know if you recall or you weren't. I don't know if you were listening, Kim, because you were busy in the newsroom, but Bill's a jerk.
Because I want Kim and her husband to have a nice anniversary.
No, you want to know when my birthday is?
Yes.
Yeah. March 3rd.
March 3rd.
Right. Write it down.
Kim's birthday.
Kevin,
March
isn't that
3.
When your birthday is?
March 9th, but
March
good job.
9th.
Good week.
It is a good week.
March 3rd, March 9th. I should put them in my calendar so I can include birthdays and anniversaries in all of my live reads.
That's the way to do it. Just slip it in. My pillow is the best pillow ever made. Happy birthday to Kim Gordon.
They did that back in the old days.
That's the way they used to do it. On
Remember
the Texaco
when they said
Star
the birthday
Theater.
Club and read all the names?
Yes.
Yeah. Wait till you hear our new segment.
Can't wait.
What was it? Willard Scott that used to wish people
yes.
Happy,
for 100, 100th birthday, and I think if you've been married over 60 years or something.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, well, then should I take it back, Kim? Only 31. No.
That's right.
Don't
but now
take
it I think
back.
Al Roker does it.
Oh,
they
he
still
does?
Do it, yeah, because yeah. It's, you know, sponsored by
people
Smuckers.
Love that.
Right.
That's who exciting. Loves that? The person whose birthday it is.
Yeah.
And their family.
Yeah, their family.
If they're over 100, they probably can't hear it anyway.
Oh. Ouch.
Oh.
Wow. Are you on the jerk bus with Bill?
No. It's true.
Well, anyway, the whole, I would just was trying to be nice to Kim because
right.
I'm Facebook friends with her and friends
you
in
know
real
her at
life.
Work, too.
Yeah.
We work with Kim.
So I thought I'd wish her a happy anniversary, and you made fun of me the whole rest of the day.
And it was so appreciated, though, Wendy. Forget about him.
Donald Trump will be speaking soon.
He's our president-elect.
Yeah, that's what they're saying, is that Donald Trump is our next president. And he was just he got a very special honor, Wendy. This is exciting news for Donald Trump. More exciting, I think, than winning the election. He's been named by Mad Magazine as the sexiest man alive.
That
a lot
is
of people
hysterical.
Want Entertainment Weekly or People or what's the other one? I think there's three magazines that name the sexiest man alive. But Mad Magazine has now thrown their hat in as well. And they have named Donald Trump as, the way they word it, the most sexiest man alive. Not just the sexiest man alive, but the most sexiest man alive. President-elect Donald Trump has been chosen, it says here, this is from Huffington Post, as Mad Magazine. Most Sexy Man Alive. The headline is a parody of People Magazine, who every year picks the sexiest man alive. Mad Magazine covers, the cover is sure to mention many of the offensive things that Trump has said about women over the years, including his infamous grab 'em, I can't say the rest on the air, as well as some rude comments that he's made toward Hillary Clinton, Carly Fiorina, and the former Miss Universe, Alicia Machado. The issue will be available digitally on Friday, and then on print on December 13th. Are some magazines just doing digital-only versions now?
Yeah, are correct, they? Is definitely.
They just do digital?
Yeah.
You know what's strange about that is if you go to, like, we still have a Barnes & Noble in Evanston. There's not as many bookstores by far as there used to be, but you can still find a bookstore. But that area in front that's all magazines is still jam-packed, you know?
Well, yeah.
It's not like, because I thought as the computer became more and more the thing, I thought, oh, are you even going to be able to find a magazine anymore? They still have, I would guess, at the Barnes & Noble by me, I would still say roughly 200 to 300 magazines monthly.
Easily. You can get them at Walgreens.
Yeah.
You can get them at Jewel or Mariano's.
Yeah.
And there still are a ton of magazines, and there are probably more coming every day.
So with one, like you mentioned, Crack, does that mean your subscription would only be an online, like there's
yeah.
no other way to read it.
You can't
unless
physically
you,
pick it up.
Yeah,
it's
guess.
Like Cracked Online. I don't think there's a Cracked magazine. I know there is a Mad magazine because my son said, hey, if you're at the grocery store, could you pick one up? And it's like $5 now.
It's expensive. Yeah.
Good God, y'all.
Well, Mad always did. I think Mad magazine came out like in its heyday. I think there were 9 issues a year. I know that seems weird. Why wouldn't you just do it monthly or every other month? But I think they did 9 a year. And then they always did what they called a super special. And that one, their expensive one, used to be, I think, $5. But now I think their monthly or bi-monthly one, I think, is $5 or $6.
How old is Mad Magazine?
Oh, I bet 50, at least 50. No, it's got to be more than 50.
Yes.
It's got to be.
It turned 50, and I don't know what year this is that I'm looking up.
Were you a reader as a kid? Did
oh,
you read
yeah.
it? Yeah, me too.
I will be honest with you. My brother was the subscriber.
Was he?
But then I would always take his and
yeah.
read it.
Yeah.
Because he had to do the fold-ins or whatever that was called.
Al Jaffe.
Yeah. And then Spy versus Spy was always great.
Sergio Aragonés.
You're
was
amazing.
That the guy who did Spy versus
it was Sergio
Spy?
Something.
I think Sergio Aragonés, I think.
Domo Aragonés.
Right, that's the guy. That's the guy they sang about. Dennis DeYoung loved his work, and he wrote a song about him.
But it's funny that you would preface the speech by President-elect Donald Trump with the mentioning...
with that high
yes.
honor of being... I don't know that Mad Magazine, has ever named a sexiest man alive before, but with Donald Trump, they couldn't ignore it. The guy's just out and out sexy, so you got to give him his due.
Boy, Alfred E. Newman, Donald Trump. Who's sexier?
What,
they look
us-ery? That should be the caption
oh my God.
Most of the nation's head right now. What, us-ery?
Well, Mad should have for sure put that on there.
I know.
He kind of looks like Alfred E. Newman's like older, more distinguished brother.
Yeah, there's a similarity, I guess.
Wow. All right, 1952 is when it started out as a 10-cent comic in 1952. Mm. And now it's like $5 an issue. Maybe it might be even more than that.
I had, in addition to the magazine that came out almost every month, nine times a year, they also had Mad Books that you could get. And I must have had 70 or 80 of those, and that was like a compilation of their best stuff. And then what happened, this is sad, but most of their A-line writers, because they were there for years and years and years, they just started passing away.
Why is that the theme of every show we do lately?
There's a lot of death on the show. I don't know why.
Seriously.
I don't know why.
Is it because we're middle-aged now?
I think so. Yeah.
I don't like it. Yeah. All right, we are going to take a break because we are awaiting President-elect Donald Trump's speech. He's with the carrier company in Indiana, going to bring some jobs back, and we're going to hear what he has to say about it when it happens. But right now, it's us, Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN.
It's us. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Donald Trump is going to speak soon, so we were just mentioning
he's still
facts.
On his plane, we found out.
Oh, he's not. Oh, he's always. That's
so
far away.
It's going to take a little while.
So while waiting for Donald Trump to speak, we are making mention of the fact that he was just named as Mad Magazine's most sexiest man alive. That's the way they word it. So we started talking about Mad Magazine a bit.
Did you know that Alfred E. Newman had a girlfriend briefly?
I did not.
A character named Moxie Kousnovsky was introduced in the late 50s as a female companion for Alfred. She made only a handful of cover appearances, possibly due to the fact that she looked much like her significant other.
Oh.
So I'd like to wish a happy anniversary to Alfred E. Newman and Moxie Kousnovsky.
Because they start to look alike after a while.
Isn't that true?
You know, he always scared me when I was a kid.
The look of Alfred E. Newman.
He was frightening. Yeah.
He was frightening.
I grew up in a town with a mental institution.
And he had a similar...
He had a look.
Yeah. I was telling Wendy, he looked like a kid in my school. I went to St. Damien in Oak Forest, and Dave Biskin looked a lot like him. And I'm online looking for pictures of Dave Biskin. You can't find a one. Nothing.
Happy birthday, Dave Biskin.
Dave Biskin's
and if you're listening, please call us right now at 312-981-7200.
Can we talk to Susie? Because she can verify something that I had always heard rumors of.
Hi, Susie.
Hi, your show is funny. And Mad Magazine, we know how hilarious it is.
Yeah.
My son, major collector, he inherited a collection from way years ago. Anyway, so one time, I think it was either on 60 Minutes or 2020, one of those shows, they showed there was a subscriber to Mad Magazine who subscribed since you could have a subscription to it. And for years and years and years, and then one day it stopped. So the office noticed that this particular man, I don't remember his name, stopped his subscription. So what they all did, all the writers and the feature cartoonists and all of them, they all got together, and they went to this man's house, knocking on his door, demanding to know why he stopped subscribing to Mad Magazine.
That's brilliant. And
it was hilarious. It was an hilarious show.
That's so funny.
And so it did happen. I don't know who the man was. I don't remember. This has to be 15 years ago, 20 years ago that I saw this.
I'd heard rumors of that for years. I'm glad somebody can verify it. And I believe they did it more than once.
That's possible. I only know that that time.
That's
so
perfect.
I just thought that was funny.
Susie, it is
anyway,
funny.
I know. Mad Magazine is still, remember, I Spy and...
Yeah,
Spy versus Spy.
Spy versus Spy, right.
And there was...
all the hilarious stuff.
It's still pretty funny, although it doesn't hold up as fantastically as it did.
Yeah.
You know, The Onion does a great job with things like that now. Mad Magazine is still worth a look-see.
Right,
yeah. Absolutely.
And as far as Alfred E. Newman goes, I think one time they kind of said he looked like Ted Koppel. I don't know.
He does look like Ted Koppel.
As a kid.
Yeah. Right. And that was kind of, could have been like an insult, or I think he took it as a flattery. I'm not sure.
An insult to Alfred Newman or to Ted Koppel? Who's insulted in that?
Maybe I think Alfred was a little.
Oh, maybe.
I'm Ted Koppel, and this is
only you
sad.
Would say that.
Susie, thank you so much. Have a great holiday.
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye, Susie.
All right, Matt wants to say something. Hey, Matt, what's going on?
Rigged. It's all rigged.
Everything's rigged.
There's no way. No, there is no way believe me, there is no way Donald Trump should have won Man of the Year. If anything, there's something going on here that's really, really bad.
Well, he was selected.
The only person that should have been the most sexiest man alive is Paul Manafort. Believe me.
Right. Well, he won the popular vote, but Donald right. Trump won the Electoral College for Sexiest Man Alive, so that's why he is.
Thank you, Matt. Have a good one. Matt hung up on himself.
It's rigged.
Hi, Alan.
Hey, why talk politics when you can talk Mad Magazine? You
true.
Guys are the best.
Oh, thank
I mean,
you.
Only you would mix Donald Trump and Alfred E. Newman. Okay,
that's
true
Bill's
story.
Beauty, the beauty of Bill Leff.
Oh, okay, Bill, you're going to love this story, I think. So, true story. 50 years ago, plus or minus three, of course, you know, I was a kid then. Of course, I subscribed to Mad Magazine
yeah.
on the Iowa farm where I grew up.
Yeah.
Well, nothing else to do out there.
You got that right, Wendy. And so that summer, 1966, around there, 65, my mom and dad and my sister and I go out to Yellowstone Park, you know, the obligatory family trek out mm-hmm. west in Dad's new Galaxy 500
nice.
Ford. Yeah, no air conditioning yet, I think.
Ooh.
Anyway, and no vinyl roof. Anyway, of course, I'm reading my Mad Magazine along with Hardy Boys and all this other stuff in the back seat.
Mm-hmm.
And we get to the gate. We get to the front gate of Yellowstone National Park, and a park ranger comes out, mild-mannered guy, whatever. And I look up, and he's leaning through the driver's window to tell my dad about where to go and you know what to pay. On his name tag, I kid you not, was Alfred E. Newman.
What?
In my hands. Yes, true story. In my hands, I was holding a Mad Magazine. I crossed the demarcation line with my sister. My mom would always put masking tape down the back seat so we wouldn't touch each other in the car, you know. We would fight. Anyway, I'm pointing to Alfred E. Newman's name in Mad Magazine and showing my sister. She of course starts laughing, so she's blowing snot through her nose. You know, she's laughing so hard. Mom and Dad are getting increasingly ticked off that we're just in stitches in the back seat.
Sure.
Finally, the guy, you know, says, "Okay, have a nice day, Elf." You know, Ranger Alfred E. Newman leaves, and my mom turns around, you know, and said, "I cannot believe you kids were like this. It's awful." I think she was probably a little madder than that. And I showed her the magazine, and she said, "So,
that's it."
It was such a mom thing. You're like, so, yeah. I mean, we really met Alfred E. Newman while I had the magazine in my hand. And thank you. And I think I've only told this story once in my life, and it's to you two
now. Today's the day.
Well thank
excellent.
You for sharing it, Alan. We appreciate
right.
it.
Thanks, Alan. You have a good weekend. Thank you. I believe he was named the character, the spokes, the cover boy model for Mad after a band leader whose name was Alfred Newman. I don't think it was Alfred E. Newman. I think it was just Alfred Newman.
And what was the connection there? Did somebody...
They were just, the writers of Mad were just a fan of this particular band leader and thought that name is suiting of this kid.
It's perfect. If you go to mentalfloss.com, they've done 12 things you may not know about Mad Magazine. We're not going to go through all of them, but I showed Bill the pictures. Mad creator Harvey Kurtzman was in the offices of Ballantine Books editor. He was discussing something for a fledgling publication, and he noticed this poster on the wall. It was a gap-toothed imbecile staring back at him from a bulletin board. And they used this like stock photo for dentistry ads and then an auto parts store. And so Kurtzman just kind of stole him, basically.
That's
and it became Mad's mascot beginning in 1954.
That long.
God, it's still out there, too.
And there were, I mean, you mentioned Cracked, but there were other similar publications that other people put out that were almost the same. You know,
I can't think of another.
I'm trying to remember what the other names
Guffaw?
Were. Guffaw? It wasn't Guffaw, but it was that kind of thing. You know, just takeoffs on the word Mad or Cracked, you know, that were all similar but not as strong.
Those are the only two I really remember.
I'm trying to remember
and
what
Mad
the other
was,
one was
better than Cracked, too.
Oh, by far. I still remember, like, when my mom would take us to the store, I would read the magazine. You know, there was always that little section that had magazines and Jewel or Dominic's or whatever. So I would read it almost cover to cover while my mom was shopping and then still buy it. I don't know why.
That's silly.
It's like I've read the whole thing, but let's own this. So,
either she shopped a very long time or you're a speed reader.
No, she would spend some time in there.
Did you go to Evelyn Woodhead Sped Redden's
yes.
course?
Yes. That's why. All right, let's do this. We need to take a break. Donald Trump will be speaking at some point during the show, and we will cover that, I think, in its entirety. We'll cover most of it anyway. News is next, though, with Steve. Stay here. It's Bill and Wendy WGN.
Thank you for keeping us up to date, Steve. And we will, of course, bring you the speech when President-elect Donald Trump actually starts it. And it looks like he's close to a podium.
We're watching.
I know that's an air conditioner.
Oh.
I got to tell you, it must be really great. A great feeling that Mike Pence has right now. It's like, you know, when you go back to your old high school and you walk around and you're like, oh, yeah, sure. I've done it. I mean, it's got to be a proud feeling for him. Like, yeah, this is my place.
He's got the Letterman's jacket on from last year.
He does not.
They've been showing, we're watching the feed from CNN, Steve. I don't know if you have the same feed there in the newsroom, but it was dizzying camera work as they walked around Carrier. Whoever had the camera didn't seem to know which way he or she was headed.
I thought NYPD Blue was showing reruns.
That's how it looked. That is how it looked.
He's talking to Dennis Franz now.
Right.
still wearing a short sleeve shirt and a tie.
Yeah. It's a pool feed, so I think it's probably one camera. And, look, the Trump camp is learning how to do these things, too.
Yeah.
There's a lot different security and all of that when it comes to a president-elect than it does with a candidate. So, there was a little mix-up there, I think, with the camera and the route. They turned the president-elect around a couple times. But he's sitting down now for what looks like a photo op, maybe with a couple of the company leaders at one of those cafeteria tables that you see in factories like this. And I assume after that he will go to the podium and make his remarks. But
yeah, they're showing,
probably a few minutes away.
Again, more dizzying camera work. This is either the president of Carrier or Wild Chicago. I can't tell which.
Okay, but let me just say this. What we're seeing is a wild pool feed. And, you know, the guys shooting it aren't necessarily shooting it for a TV show.
Right.
They're just trying to get in place.
So right.
We're just kind of eavesdropping in a place where we might not otherwise be.
Yeah.
And I am shocked that Donald Trump has not done a more updated Twitter post, because the last one that came up was that he's getting ready to leave for the great state of Indiana and meet the hardworking and wonderful people of Carrier AC. And that was 5 hours ago. Why didn't he tweet that he arrived in Indiana? Come on, stay on top of this. If you're going to tweet.
No, he only does the tweets at 4 a.m. This is not his time to tweet.
Oh, you know what?
Later tonight, he'll tweet about what he did today.
I mean, a lot of people are tweeting today. I would get lost in the whole dizzying crowd.
Yeah. You do it late at night when most people are asleep.
Right.
That's the way to do it. Now, the plant seems, Steve, from what I can tell on the feed, to be open. Every time they show somebody, they've got some sort of a machine, and they're doing their job. It's not like they closed the plant because he's there.
I can see why they wanted to close it. The workers are all just standing around looking at the president-elect.
Right.
They're not getting anything done.
Right. It's like Cyber Monday over there. It's like WGN on Monday.
Yeah, they're doing some work. But, yeah, it's a big day for them, too. They'd be pretty cool. Yeah.
It would be cool. I'm sorry. He's the president-elect.
Absolutely. And he saved their jobs. I mean, these are the people, presumably, who would have been.
This is the direct plant that would have been closed. The plan was for them. They were earmarked to lose their jobs, and it would have gone Mexico's way, right?
That's my understanding,
yeah.
Yes.
All right. So right now, all we're seeing on the news feed is various people at the Carrier plant.
I would not want an air conditioner made at that factory today. Because I just don't think they're paying attention.
Right. And we're not getting
any. We have a Carrier, now that I bring it. Yes.
We're not getting any sound here in our studio, Steve, but my guess is you're hearing a lot of this.
Here's what I'm hearing.
Rivets.
Yep.
A little white noise. That's about it.
It's got to be a really exciting day.
It is for me to listen to that for about 20 minutes.
No, but for them, you know, getting a little break in the action, and there's Donald Trump walking around.
So the plan is he will pretty much say, this is the beginning of what we're going to try to do, right? I mean, that's going to be the gist of today's speech, is just as we've hopefully saved your jobs, that's our game plan for the next 4 years. It's going to be that sort of thing, correct?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is what he campaigned on, you know, the fact that all of these jobs were going to Mexico and to China and the trade deals and all of that.
But
so,
who gets credit in this particular case,
well,
Steve, for Carrier? Does he get credit on this one?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, it doesn't hurt that Mike Pence was the governor and probably had their ear as well. But look, Mike Pence was the governor when they decided to move, you know.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think he worked the phone. I don't know. You know, what sort of leverage he used, what sort of deal he made. The parent company of Carrier has quite a number of government contracts. I don't know that, you know, it's in the authority of the president-elect to be you know, pre-negotiating those contracts or whatever. But
right.
No, this is a nice sort of feather in the Donald Trump cap. Absolutely.
And also the White House is reporting that, you know, Donald Trump is to announce that he's going to be saving 1,000 manufacturing jobs. But during Barack Obama's 8 years, he created 805,000 of them.
Wow.
Well, he saved the auto industry. And I think a lot of those are jobs that might have been gone, and they're counting those. But, you know, that's the opposing party saying what they need to say.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it is.
Steve, is it true that Mike Pence has a conversion plan for air conditioners that want to be heaters?
No, you misheard that. It's a conversion van.
Oh, conversion van. I apologize.
We have to take a quick break, and we will keep you posted when Donald Trump takes the podium.
Can I give you one more news story while I've got you?
Please.
Yes.
We've been following this story with Governor, it's sort of a tit-for-tat in Springfield, where the governor vetoed the Chicago pension deal, the Chicago teachers' pension deal, because he didn't like what Senator Cullerton said about a bigger statewide pension deal. Well, now already the Senate, on this veto session, has voted to override the governor's veto from earlier today. So fast-moving events in Springfield,
wow,
too.
It seems. Thanks, Steve. All right, a quick break and then more show. President-elect Donald Trump is at Carrier and will be making a speech shortly. We'll cover that for you. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's us. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. You can call us or text us at 312-981-7200. We were told earlier that President-elect Donald Trump will be at the Carrier plant in Indiana, making a speech. We are waiting for that. He is at the plant. Right now he's sitting down with Mike Pence and other dignitaries, and he'll be taking to the microphone fairly soon.
They just got lunch out of a vending machine like all the other factory workers.
And how about that?
Okay, again, I don't know whether to believe him or not.
That's not true. Sorry.
No.
Is he a newsman? Is he a funny guy?
He's both.
He is both.
He's like the McDLT.
I cannot believe either of you ever again.
No.
Although, here's my problem, because I'm going to ask you questions now.
All right.
I want to know from both of you, and listeners, feel free to jump in. Realize, though, when President-elect Trump takes the podium, we will run this live. Mitt Romney has said some horrible things about Donald Trump.
And it's been reciprocated.
And Donald Trump has said
He's a choke artist.
Yeah, that came up.
It's both of them have had really choice words for each other.
Right.
And now Mitt Romney has twice met with President-elect Donald Trump in the past 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Most recently was dinner. The first meeting, Romney traveled to the Trump National Golf Club in New Jersey to talk about serving as Trump's Secretary of State.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my question. Why would Mitt Romney do this? Isn't he still wealthy?
Extremely.
Yeah, I don't think you take a Secretary of State job for the cash.
Well, then why in the world would he go against everything he has said, horrible things that he has said?
Yeah. He's a fraud. He's a phony.
Right.
Those are quotes from Mitt Romney.
Right.
Well, there are a couple of theories. I mean, one is that he loves his country and he feels as if he can serve his country well by becoming Secretary of State. You know, I mean, and if a president calls for you to do that, generally you do.
But would Trump have called for him? Can I just interject?
Yeah.
Would Trump have called for him? Obviously, Mitt Romney showed he was very interested.
Yeah. Yeah. Without a doubt.
I don't think Donald would have just said, hey, that guy that I was slamming forever.
Right.
Well, let's put him on the short list.
I don't know who danced first on this. I don't. Wow. But the other thing is, you know, look, Mitt Romney ran for president for the better part of 8 years. And did not succeed. He clearly is interested in the national government spotlight, and this is a way for him to not have been elected president, but, you know, to serve in a very high-ranking government position. So there can be that as well. But I'm with you, and the more time passes, the more I realize that, you know, we always say that words matter. When you speak, when you use hurtful words or terms, words matter. I think the lesson I've learned this fall is that words don't matter.
Not at all.
And that's the thing, you know, you can have these guys on both sides of the aisle. It's not a partisan thing, but just say the worst things about each other and about their leadership and their abilities. And then on a dime, they can turn and be allied with them while the rest of us who've been listening to that for months are expected to come along.
Right.
And we don't. I mean, you know, if you tell me that this guy's a snake charmer, whichever guy or woman, and you believe that and I trust you, I'm going to go with that. And just because you can make peace. I think they, you know, I think they expect the rest of us to sort of put it behind us. And that's what's causing so much of the trouble out here.
And here's the thing. If he wasn't a fan of Donald Trump, he could have said that. I don't want him to win, but, you know, then held back from all the terrible things he did say. Because, I'm sorry, there was a 50-50 chance that Donald Trump was going to win, and he did win the election.
Yeah.
So Mitt had to know, you know, I got better be careful what I say. It just seems so weird to me that he's cozying up to him now.
It is unusual, but if it's the country that is at stake, you know, then if that's why he's doing it, good for him. But we don't see the Bush family doing this.
No,
you know, and
they've not.
And they kind of had a similar relationship through the election and the campaign.
But Steve, other people on the right, and I'll include Ted Cruz in this, and I'll include Marco Rubio to some extent, and John McCain to some extent, other people that said awful things about Donald Trump at any point during the campaign have either rescinded or gone the other way. Mitt Romney hasn't 100% gone the other way, but look, every time you see a picture of Mitt Romney now, Donald Trump is sitting next to him and they're discussing
right. The
future.
They don't look like it's a comfortable situation, though. I'm sorry.
It probably isn't the most comfortable. Think about that. If you had to sit down with somebody that you had said horrible things about or had horrible things about you, how much tension would be at that
but
table?
But that's why I, honest to God, try not to say anything bad about someone. Like, especially in radio, you know, sometimes people go, I would never work with that person. Be careful what you say, and if you say it, mean it.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I never thought I'd be with you two.
No.
You totally said never, Bertrand.
Horrible things about us, Steve, as recently as this morning.
But, you know, you've got, and you've got Ted Cruz being rumored to be under consideration. You know, part of it is the heat of the campaign, and that's just part of it. You want to distinguish yourself from the other person by saying bad things about
right.
the other person. So,
you but these
know,
were
I get
horrible
that.
Things.
These went beyond. I mean,
Steve, if I said, you know, the thing about Steve Bertrand's dad is this: he was behind the Kennedy assassination.
Right.
You'd hold a grudge on me for that, wouldn't you?
It would stay with me.
Yeah,
yeah, it would.
That wouldn't, because I'd say that is absolutely ludicrous, and everyone knows it. You're
know,
a jokester.
But think about the context of what this election was. Where it was, you could make claims about somebody. You could say of another potential nominee, that guy's dad was one of the guys behind the Kennedy assassination.
What they said specifically, and it was in Indiana,
yeah,
that Donald Trump said or alluded to a picture of Ted Cruz's dad with Lee Harvey Oswald
right.
yep.
just before the assassination.
Right.
All right. Well, I think he might be getting close to approach. I think he's walking up to the podium. Do we go live now, Steve?
No, we don't. I'm really enjoying
because he's got an opening act, right? Doesn't Sinbad
listening.
Come out and do 15 minutes before he comes out?
The two of you have been killing time for 55 minutes.
We've done an excellent
now.
Job. That's what we do every day. What do you mean 55 minutes? Should we squeak a break in or are we live?
Sure, give it a quick shot.
All right. We'll be back with President-elect Donald Trump, 720 WGN. It's Bill and Wendy. We are so divided. The phone is ringing. Texts are coming in. There are people that love what just happened
sure.
and what was said.
And?
And some people who are not so happy about it.
Yeah. I hope that doesn't shock you. I think you're going to see a lot of that in the next 4 years, don't you?
Yeah.
Every time he sneezes, people go, well, of course he's sneezing. That guy and other people will be for it. It's divisive.
Oh, and I've heard people say divisive, and I don't like it said that way. Oh, is it an either-or game, Steve?
Can't we even agree on how to divide ourselves?
No.
Please.
I got to admit, I started doing tally marks for a couple of words. Great, tremendous, and incredible.
Well, he is prone to speak in superlatives.
That's you mean Mr. Superlative?
Yeah, that's his vocal pattern, is everything is unbelievable and fantastic. And
Wall wasn't on your list, though? I'm surprised.
I did not put
he
Wall.
He hit that, too.
I know. I heard that. He said euphemism incorrectly, but that's okay. You know. But can I just point something out, and it's not a good or bad? Absolutely no sniffing.
There wasn't any sniffling today.
None.
And he was in a place that manufactures air conditioners. So you'd think it'd be a little drafty in there, but we didn't have any sniffling. We got to find out a lot about Bobby Knight during the speech. I was hoping that would happen, and it did.
Kudos to you for wanting to know more about that.
Right.
We're here for you, and we will talk about it, but we have to take a break, and then we have news coming up. It's Bill and Wendy on 720 WGN.
Thank you, Steve Bertrand. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy. The president-elect, Donald Trump, just spoke. He's in Indiana at the Carrier plant. He spoke for quite a while. Yes, he talked about Bobby Knight, the legendary basketball coach.
I feel I have to say something.
All right. Why wouldn't you?
Because I was going to start by saying I feel guilty, and I don't feel guilty, but I will say this factually. After the times we aired President Obama speaking on this station, I never felt the urge to critique and talk about it.
So why now?
I don't know, but I feel I have to.
All right.
But I feel weird about it.
Come on. It's okay. Do you have questions, comments, thoughts, ideas, recipes?
I got a lot of things.
All right.
And Judy has something she'd like to talk about, too. Hi, Judy. How are you?
I'm fine. Say, you know, I want to say, first of all, congratulations to the Carrier people. You know, that's wonderful for them. But what I, and I think a whole lot of other people would like to know is, when is Donald going to bring the production of his Trump brand collection into the U.S.?
It's a great question.
His ties, his shirts, his suits, his wallets. The whole Trump collection, when's that going to come into the United States?
That's made primarily in China, correct? Yeah.
And I believe some in Mexico, if I'm not mistaken.
And the beauty of it, if you're the president-elect, is in 2 weeks he's going to turn over control of his company so he can say, I don't know. That's not his responsibility anymore. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, but that would be the easiest one for him to make the phone call on.
You're right.
It would be. But
And are those products going to be charged 35% and 40% tax to come into the country?
That would be shocking if that were the case. See, that's the part that I'm always confused by. I'm thrilled that he saved all those jobs. That's fantastic
news.
It
is great.
But as he just said, he's working on a lower tax base for big business, for industry. He wants to cut it, I guess, in half. It's somewhere around 30% to 40%. Now he wants to bring it to 15%. However, the bad news in that is, That's money that would have to be made up someplace else. That money just doesn't go off the books. The U.S. government builds itself on tax money, whether it's from industry or from private citizens, and they're not just going to forget about that money. They'll have to make it up somehow. So where would that money come from?
I have a lot of questions, but you know what I mean? I feel when President Barack Obama, our current president, spoke, we didn't sit here and do a Q&A afterwards.
Right.
We kind of went back to our regularly scheduled program.
Right.
So why is it so different now?
I don't know.
But do you know what I mean? Thank you for calling,
Judy.
Judy,
questions are valid. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I feel dirty, Bill. It's not the first time, won't be the last.
Well, you could get some soap, but it's made in Manila. Do you want to use Manila soap?
Is it vanilla?
It's vanilla. They didn't even write their own music or sing their own songs.
All right, Chris, talk to us.
Yes, I was watching this whole thing on CNN, and before Trump and Pence came on, one of the experts said that Carrier is getting a $7 million tax incentive over the next 10 years. And this expert said that when CEOs are making $100 million, that this is not right.
That's...
I'm all for people not losing their jobs because they have kids, they have families. This always seems to happen around the holidays.
Right.
But these are things that they're not telling the people. But you have to be a little informed. Watch CNN. There's a lot of good information on there. And not only that, but all of the jobs from Carrier are not being saved. Some of them are still going to Mexico. And there's another plant a couple of blocks down from Carrier. Their jobs, are, I don't know, they didn't say the name of the company, but 350 of those jobs are going to Mexico. So this expert said, too, that some kind of a precedent has to be set on who gets bailed out and who doesn't.
Right.
And how and where all this money is coming from. I'm not, you know, I've had family members who have fallen on, you know, bad times, and fortunately they've recovered, you know, but you have to be a little bit more informed. And like the lady before me said, he wants jobs to come back to the United States, and like she said, his suits come from Mexico and the shirts and ties from Venezuela or Indonesia or someplace. So, you know, and this, it seemed like this whole speech he made was more about him.
Well, it's a PR move. That's all it is. And it's a brilliant PR move because, boy, does this look good.
It looks great.
He just saved 1,000 jobs in the heart of the Midwest. That looks fantastic. But the reality is that money needs to be made up somewhere, and it's going to be us making up that money.
Yes. So everything for us is going to – and I'm sure that people in Indiana, their taxes and stuff are probably going to be raised and all of this kind of stuff too. But, you know,
sure seems like it. And people have been leaving here to go to Indiana because the taxes aren't so high.
Exactly. That's right. Because as a matter of fact, there was a Chicago company not too long ago. I saw it on TV. This poor man, the owner of the company, was almost crying. He said, I don't want to go to Indiana. But he said he can't afford to stay in Chicago anymore because, you know, like the taxes and workman's comp. And
right.
He said he can't do it.
No, sometimes your hand is forced.
Kind of like my speak your piece.
It worked.
Thank you, Chris. We appreciate it. Someone else has texted, Bill, what's going to prevent other companies from threatening to take jobs out of the country?
To get a lower tax rate.
Or to get the $7 million incentive that Carrier got to stay in the country.
Right. There's nothing to stop. That's
what's
going to happen if it isn't already happening. And why wouldn't you? That makes perfect sense. You go, how about Carrier's deal? No, it wouldn't apply to you. You don't make air conditioners.
I use them.
I know. Why? Tell them that when you call them.
Hi, Dorothy.
Hi. I was just going to say the same thing that lady just got finished saying. Mike Pence did not give up his governorship in Indiana, particularly because of this. And he's the guy that pushed that $700,000 or whatever it was, the incentive that they gave him. And Trump was not going to give anybody any incentives to stay. Already he's lied again.
So what do you think is behind this deal? With everything you just said, what do you think is behind this deal then?
Well, I mean, he's just trying to sell a bill of goods to the nation. Sure. I mean, you know, why wouldn't he?
Yeah.
But, you know, if people don't know the whole story and they only hear half of it from him,
yeah,
that part he wants people to hear.
Yeah. Because this does, when you look at this, you go, boy, is it Christmas is coming. Mm-hmm. Here's 1,000 jobs that just got saved by Superman. That looks fantastic. But then you got to look behind the strings a little bit and go, okay, but somebody's going to have to flip the bill for the money that they just saved Carrier.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you and I are paying for it. Even though we aren't in Indiana, we're still paying for it.
Yeah. Dorothy, thanks.
Uh-huh.
Are you frustrated? You should be frustrated.
I am because, you know, it's. I just want everyone to come together, and I don't see that ever happening ever again in the history of the world. Hi, Florence. Can we come together?
Right now.
Well, yeah, maybe so. Can
really?
You hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. So my point is that I think we'll see some of that $7 million made up by those 1,000 employees still paying United States income tax and income tax in Indiana and spending money and paying sales tax and not being on food stamps, which would be a negative draw, and not being on unemployment, which would be a negative draw. So to say that there's no, that it's just we're losing $7 million in this tax incentive given to Carrier is a really narrow view of the whole situation, and you're not presenting both sides of the topic. So I think to discount the money that's going to churn through the economy because people are employed and paying taxes is to be very naive about.
Do you think those
do you think
those numbers balance out though? If you do the math on this, does that balance out?
I don't have enough information to make that analysis, but you're not even bringing up that point. You're not even saying there's a way there is an offset here. You're just saying who's going to pay for this $7 million? Well, it could come from a lot of places. We might have to pay more, I don't know, but I can tell you one thing, we were going to be getting zero from Carrier when they were in Mexico. Zero taxes.
Right.
So instead of losing $7 million, why don't you look at it like we're keeping, if we're going from 35% down to 15%, maybe we're keeping $2 million in tax revenue base instead of losing, you know, nine.
Florence, to some extent, when I said this earlier, I'm thrilled the fact that 1,000 people are now not out of work. And I think part of that comes with the fact that they will be spending money. I mean, that is a good thing. If there are good and there's good parts and there's bad parts to what we just saw and heard today, that's one of the good parts. I just don't know that it balances. And Carrier was one company. You're going to see dozens, if not more, companies doing exactly what Carrier just did, saying, hey, if you want to keep us, we'll head to Mexico, or you can give us this incentive. That's a lot of money that's going to flip. That's a lot of money.
Well, you're saying that people are going to make a play, say they're going to move to Mexico, not without really the intention.
You don't think that'll happen at all after today? Or even if it's not a play, even if companies say, and they should, hey, you just gave Gary, you swung him a great deal over a Carrier. I got a manufacturing company. Help me. Companies would be lined up forever based on what we just saw today, won't they?
Well, potentially, but if they are paying, first of all, I think corporate income tax is sort of ridiculous. People pay income tax when they get the money, at an individual level when they get the money. Corporations are nothing but a bunch of people, so that's a discussion for another day. But I guess I would say that it depends on what investments they make with that tax savings, because yeah. I think the private sector can spend money much more intelligently than the government sector
you
can.
You would hope so.
President Obama's answer to this was more job training. Those jobs are never coming back, so we have to get more job training. I'm not against job training, but why are we not even trying to save the jobs? So we say, this only saves 1,000 jobs. What about everybody else? It's like saying, gosh, we can't fix the whole problem, so let's not fix any of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not all in with this president, but come on.
He's all we've got.
Else. Yeah.
All right.
He's our guy. So, all right, you guys have a good one.
Thanks, Florence.
Thanks for chatting, Florence. It was nice talking to you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
See, we can have a civil conversation, can't we?
Yeah.
Instead of the text going, face it, our guy won. No, talk to us.
I know. All right, there's plenty more calls and texts. 312-981-7200. We'll get to as many of you as we can right after this. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right, it's us. It's Bill and Wendy. We don't have a whole lot of time. Let me just quickly catch you up if you're just joining us. President-elect Donald Trump and Mike Pence, Vice President-elect Mike Pence, spoke earlier today at the Carrier manufacturing plant in Indiana. So we're trying to digest it just a little bit. Yeah, there is some good. Jobs were saved, and that is always a good thing. And to my opinion anyway, there is also some bad. And we're trying to dissect what's what right now. So 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in.
All right, Dale wants to jump in. Dale, did you call before? We couldn't get through to you, so go ahead.
Yeah, hi. By the way, I love your guys' show.
Thank
love
you, it. Dale.
From what I heard, Carrier, it wasn't a done deal anyway that they were going to send 1,000 jobs down there. They were thinking about it, but, you know, I think Pence had more to do with that than Donald Trump, to tell you the truth. And he's just using that, like you said, Bill, you know, PR move.
Yeah.
You know, oh, Donald Trump, I'm told you, you know. And
it's a great PR move. It really is. I'm not a fan of those guys, but it's a great PR move.
Well, yeah, but you know, take credit for something you didn't do. And even on MSNBC, they had said, "Wow, it's okay, 1,000 jobs." So you figure if he does that maybe 152 more times, he'll you know, it'll work out to what he said he was going to do. You know, during the election, you know, saving millions of jobs and stuff like that. You know, it's 1,000 jobs, you know. 1,000, it doesn't sound like a lot, but, you know.
No, it is a lot. It is a lot.
It's going to make an impact, you know. Mm. And it's only going to make an impact in Indiana. You know, it's not going to make an impact, you know, in the whole nation, you know.
Yeah.
Which, you know, you got to start thinking about not just Carrier, but what about U.S. Steel? The steel industry.
Oh, sure,
you know,
of
and
course.
All this, the big guys, you know, cars, Detroit, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just say, wow, Carrier, okay, wow, we did it. You know, okay, that's great.
Our work is done.
You know, because, you know, it's not going to, you know, he tries to take credit to where, you know, and then he gets on there and talks almost like in the third person.
Yeah, he does refer to himself as Trump a bit.
That's how he rolls, man. Dale, we got to run, but thank you for calling.
Okay, have a good holiday.
You as well. And I think Irene wants to jump in as well, and this might be all we have time for. Irene, how are you? Irene?
She's so upset she can't even talk, Wendy. That's what it's come to.
All right. Well, let's see.
She was just fuming. I could hear fumes.
Hi, John.
Hi, Wendy. Hi, Bill. How are you?
Fine, John. What's up?
Well, I mean, everybody seems to be kind of twisting this out of proportion. I mean, we're talking about Rust Belt jobs, means basically big manufacturing jobs.
Right.
He did talk about car companies, and he did talk about, you know, carrier. And these are the big jobs that keep families here,
yeah,
that pay mortgages, that pay, you know, make the economy great. The $700,000 per year for 10 years is tax incentives that Indiana's doing for carrier. It's got nothing to do with the federal government. Yes, it was a bit of a PR thing for Trump, but all in all, this is a good thing because we got to get more of these big manufacturing jobs back in the United States to pay families the right salaries so they could stay here and make money and be consumers.
That would be nice.
I mean, wallets or shirts or things like that, that might not be something that comes back.
Right.
But the big Rust Belt jobs like LTV Steel, all this, we got to work on that. I think it's great that he's working on it. And try to come up with ideas to do it.
He mentioned today that his hope, his goal in this, is to make a 15% base tax salary for all manufacturing nationwide, not just for carrier, not just for Indiana, but all of the nation. So I wonder what the trickle-down effect is. We've had some people text in saying, and a caller who just said, and I believe this, that means it saves jobs for people here in the United States who then turn the money over and they pay taxes, and that's true. I just don't know that the numbers add up quite as nicely as they should. I would love them to. I just don't know that they do.
Well, I think it does because there's probably $2 trillion offshore because of regulations and other types of things. It brings that money back into the economy. Easily there's going to be taxes paid on that.
Yeah.
That might be 10%. You're going to make it up in multiple different ways. Just like he just said with the goodwill, he said, I want to come back to you in 6 months and see how many air conditioners you sell, and I bet you're going to sell more than what you're selling today. So all in all, it still funnels into more taxes going into the Treasury because you're selling more in the United States and you're taxing it appropriately. So it's going to make it up. I know it's going to.
But, John, can I ask you this? When he talked about, during the election, he kept talking about building up the infrastructure and improving roadways and bridges and airports and on and on and on and on. But he still kept selling the fact that he's going to lower our tax base. But all those repairs, all those jobs that would have to be created to do all those things, those are tax-based jobs. So where does that money come from exactly?
Well, that's the big part of what they're still trying to figure out of how they're going to actually borrow the money to do that. Are they going to basically take money out of other programs?
Right.
How are they going to effectively make that happen? So I think that's a big unknown right now, Bill. I agree with you on reference to the roads and bridges, whether it's bonds or whatever. But I see why a lot of people moved to Indiana, because my brother-in-law and other people moved to Indiana because of the taxes.
Right.
Illinois is ridiculous.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. John, thank you. Appreciate it. Have a great week.
You too. Thanks.
Okay, take care.
And congratulations to the 1,100 jobs that he's keeping.
That's good. Believe me, as critical as I want to be, that's a good thing. I feel bad for the jobs that are still going. I mean,
right,
there still has other jobs going to Mexico.
Over 1,000 going away, and they're not going to have as great of a Christmas.
No.
All right, well, we're all in it together, so I think we all have the same hope that he succeeds at what he does, because we're all in this together. I'll go down together. I just don't know.
You picked that Billy Joel lyric of all the Billy Joel lyrics.
I know. Well, what are you going
to
do?
Oh, no.
All right. We have to take a quick break, and then Ro and Anna are live at the United Center. Can we all come together in support of the Blackhawks?
Yes,
that can
that'll
we
bring
do?
Us together. I promise. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN.